Good morning.
Good morning.
Whether you're joining us in virtual space or here in the sanctuary, welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. We are a spiritual community dedicated to a free and responsible search for truth, meaning, and beauty. I'm Reverend Chris Jimerson, co-lead minister. I'm a 6-foot white male with light brown hair, and my pronouns are he, him. It is a joy to be with you this morning. I especially want to welcome you if you're new to the church, if you're joining us remotely, and if you can, please say hello in the comments and let us know from where you're watching the service. If you're here in person, please join us for our social hour after worship. Either way, we invite you to fill out our online visitor form. Just go to austinuu.org, click on worship, and then click on the link to the form and fill that out. We'd love to get to know you a little bit better. I also want to especially welcome the 10 new members who joined our church yesterday at the Path to Membership class. Today we'll be exploring pluralism, and to observe cultural pluralism, we'll be celebrating with song and story that today is also Cinco de Mayo. Kara Ann Kinley of the Washington Post writes, "Cinco de Mayo commemorates the military victory of the Mexican Army against invading French forces at the Battle of Puebla in 1862. It was an almost victory for the Mexican force, underdogs who defeated one of the most powerful armies in the world. It is a celebration created by and for Latino communities in the United States. It is more about Latino history and culture than Mexican history." What might happen if we thought about Cinco de Mayo beyond a celebration of Mexico's delicious food, its beautiful artistic and cultural traditions, and rich history? History shows that Cinco de Mayo is also a chance to reflect upon how Mexican-American and Latinos in the U.S. have long struggled against, along with African Americans and all people of color, white supremacy culture, racism, and colonialism. That seems like something worth celebrating. We come from a long tradition of seeing a spark of the divine in every person, and it's in that tradition that I invite you to greet the holy among us this morning, either in the comments online or by turning to those around you if you're here in person.
And now join me in saying the words for lighting our chalice. This is the flame we hold in our hearts as we strive for justice for everyone. This is the light we shine upon systems of oppression until they are no more. This is the warmth we share with one another as our struggle becomes our salvation. Today, our call to worship includes two quotes, the first from Walt Whitman. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. And the second from Rumi, who said, there are many ways to kneel and kiss the ground.
One of the things that binds First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin together as a religious community is that we have a common religious purpose. For this church, that purpose is our mission. The congregation wrote it together, we emblazoned it on our wall, and those participating in the service every Sunday say it together so that we might more readily carry it in our hearts throughout the week. Let's say it together now. Together, we nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice to build the beloved community.
Credo in unum Deum.
Thank you.
Our reading today will be a responsive reading called The Sacred Hoop by Black Elk. Then I was standing on the highest mountain of them all, and round about beneath me was the whole hoop of the world. And while I stood there, I saw more than I can tell, and I understood more than I saw. For I was seeing the sacred manner, the shape of all things of the Spirit, and the shape of all shapes as they must, like one being. And I saw that the sacred hoop of my people was one of many hoops that made one circle, wide as daylight and as starlight. And in the center grew one mighty flowering tree, and I saw that it was holy.
This is the time in our service when we center ourselves together. We breathe together. And breathing together, we sense one another's loving presence. Breathing in and breathing out, we follow our breath to a deeper place inside, a place of greater wisdom, a place where a spark of the divine resides within each of us. And breathing together, we enter into a time of sacred silence together, all the while remembering that we also hold sacred human sounds, including those of small children. Breathing in, breathing out, we now enter the sacred silence together. I invite you now to light candles, candles representing sorrow, joy, hope, remembrance, resilience, whatever is in your heart at this time. As we light candles, I invite you to keep in your mind and heart Georgia Corin, who is in rehabilitation after suffering a stroke. Please also hold Ken Cohn in your hearts, who fell and broke his hip and some ribs and is also undergoing physical therapy. And finally, please hold Mani Subrabanyan, who is recovering from a hip fracture. Now let us enter into a time of meditative quiet and candle lighting together. And when the music comes to a close, let us continue the meditative silence.
Thank you.
And now we light one last candle for all those for whom there is no one to light a candle. Two battleships had been at sea on maneuvers for several days in very bad weather. Visibility was poor with a heavy fog, so the captain of the lead battleship remained on the bridge, keeping an eye on all activities. Shortly after dark, one of his lookouts reported light bearing on the starboard bow. "Is it steady or moving astern?" the captain called out. The lookout replied, "Steady, captain," which meant they were on a dangerous collision course with another ship. The captain then called to the signalman, "Signal that ship. We are on a collision course. Advise you change course 20 degrees. Back came a signal. "Advise for you to change course 20 degrees. The captain said, "Send, I'm a captain. Change course 20 degrees. "I'm a seaman second class," came the reply. "You had better change course 20 degrees. By that time, the captain was furious. He spat out, "Send, I'm a battleship, change course 20 degrees. Back came the signal, "I'm a lighthouse." The captain changed course. That story illustrates how we so often have very limited information and very different perspectives from one another. So there's great value, perhaps, as in our story, even salvific potential, in sharing and valuing our differences, being open and curious about other folks' frames of reference. And yes, sometimes being willing to acknowledge when our perspective turns out to just be wrong. Sometimes only by combining each of our limited perceptions of the complex and daunting reality in which we find ourselves are we able to collectively ascertain something closer to what may be ultimate truth. Here's another wisdom story that illustrates this idea as related by our UU minister, Reverend Michelle Collins. In a distant village lived six friends known for their adventurous spirit and unquenchable curiosity. One day, a traveler passed through, bringing tales of a magnificent creature, an elephant, a being none in the village had ever seen. To satisfy their curiosity, the friends decided to experience this wonder firsthand. But to make their encounter more intriguing, they agreed to do it with a cloth tied around their heads so that their eyes would be covered, to rely solely on their other senses. As the elephant was brought before them, each friend approached, their hands reaching out in anticipation. The first, upon touching the elephant's sturdy side, declared, "Ah, this creature is like a wall, broad and unyielding." Meanwhile, the second friend found the elephant's tusk. "You are mistaken," he claimed. "This creature is hard and sharp like a spear." The confusion grew as each friend encountered different parts of the elephant. The third friend, feeling the trunk, argued, no, it is like a thick snake." The fourth, holding the elephant's ear, disagreed. "It's definitely like a large fan or perhaps a giant leaf." The fifth, who had stumbled upon the elephant's leg, announced, "All of you are wrong. This is clearly a tree trunk, strong and round." Lastly, the sixth, grasping the tail, laughed at the others. "You are all fooled. This creature is like a rope, long and thin." Isn't it amazing how old friends' voices start to sound exactly the same even when they're disagreeing? The friends bickered, each convinced of their own perception, their voices rising in a cacophony of disagreement. It wasn't until the traveler, amused by their debate, removed their cloths that they perceived the elephant in its entirety. They stared in wonder at the magnificent creature, realizing that each of them was right, yet also wrong. The wall, the spear, the snake, the fan, the tree, and the rope were all parts of the same wondrous being. The traveler spoke. "You each touched the same truth, but from different angles. The elephant is all you described and more. It teaches us that our individual experiences can be true, but may not represent the whole picture." Both of these stories vividly represent the great value of pluralism. Pluralism is the belief that not only must we allow our differences, varied beliefs, and widely disparate world perspectives to peacefully coexist side by side, but further, that we will all be enriched and increase our own insight and creative potential by valuing our differences, allowing them to interact with one another in loving and respectful ways. Pluralism can be extremely valuable across cultural, political, religious, and other perspectives. Now, as AJ announced earlier, we'll be having continued discussions in the church about a proposed change to the covenant among our Unitarian Universalist congregations and other institutions. That proposal includes pluralism as one of the values we would explicitly adopt together. The proposal describes pluralism like this: "We celebrate that we are all sacred beings, diverse in culture, experience, and theology. We covenant to learn from one another in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We embrace our differences and commonalities with love, curiosity, and respect." I think it is vital that we do explicitly embrace pluralism as a value. As a faith without creed, we celebrate having a wealth of theologies or ultimate belief systems among us, centered together in relationship and love. We recognize that respecting and sharing these varied perspectives helps each of us to nourish our own soul by multiple factors and holds the potential to transform our lives. So, pluralism has been essential to our faith tradition, even if we haven't always named it as such. And making it explicit can exponentially enhance our spiritual evolution, or personal development, if you prefer. And pluralism also demands that we affirm a long-standing and fundamental aspect of Unitarian Universalism: the right of conscience. There can be no pluralism without the right of conscience. Now, right of conscience can be a little slippery to define and can mean different things to different people. However, many scholars believe its core elements are outlined in Amendment 1 to our U.S. Constitution and include freedom of belief, including freedom of religion, freedom of speech and a free press, the right of peaceful assembly, and the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And, dear Governor Abbott and far too many others, right of conscience, including freedom of expression and assembly, applies whether or not you agree with the protesters at UT and other educational institutions about the situation with Palestine and Israel or not. And even if you question the protesters' tactics, mass arrests using often violent, militarized state police are the tools of fascism, not not democratic government founded upon those very rights and freedoms. The right of conscience must include the ability to act or not to act based upon one's ethical principles. And here is where things can get a little slippery. The far right, in my opinion, reactionary conservatives on our Supreme Court ruled a while back that a woman in Colorado can discriminate against LGBTQ folks seeking her web design services because of her sincerely held religious beliefs. They are wrong. Our rights and freedoms do not extend to acting in ways that harm others and deny them their rights. For us, as Unitarian Universalists, our commitment to right of conscience doesn't include allowing out-of-covenant behavior and welcoming the expressions of beliefs that are harmful to beloveds among us. So we are not required to tolerate acts or expressions of hostility toward our faith. As Unitarian Universalists, we cannot claim right of conscience as a reason to abstain from our commitment to doing justice and building the beloved community. We can and must counteract speech or behavior that denigrates women, is racist toward our BIPOC beloveds, or harmful to our LGBTQ plus loved ones, for example. We do not have to tolerate intolerance in the name of inclusiveness or affirming right of conscience. That, in fact, would be a surefire way of watering down our faith into utter meaninglessness. Now, this doesn't mean we get to cut ourselves off from those with whom we disagree. In fact, pluralism demands that we do not. We'll be offering educational opportunities soon on how we might practice pluralism even in this age of great polarization in which we find ourselves. For now, know that we can realize the beauty of pluralism while still upholding our own principles and values. This is called self-differentiation. And we can do that as individuals, as a community, and as an entire faith movement. This idea of self-differentiation brings me to one other area of pluralism that I hadn't even thought about until my therapist brought it up after I mentioned that I was doing this sermon. I have to stop telling her what I'm preaching about. Anyway, one of the therapy modalities that she uses is called internal family systems, or IFS therapy. IFS recognizes that we all have a core self that is rooted in love, that is calm, playful, and creative. We also, though, have other sub-personalities, or parts, that we have developed in response to our experiences in life, including trauma, which none of us makes it through life without experiencing. We have developed these parts to try to help us survive, and they may at one time have even been adaptive. But they can be in conflict with one another. They can become harmful if ignored as we grow and change as human beings and our life situation changes. Two of the strongest parts I developed in my childhood we have nicknamed, "I'll see you're overfunctioning and raise you one perfectionism." And here, let me fix that for you. Now, this is a very simplified explanation of IFS therapy, but basically, what we do is we work to identify these various parts of ourselves so that we can put our core self in conversation with them, as well as put the parts into conversation with one another. It's sort of an internal pluralism that allows these parts to heal and our core self to more fully emerge. And this creates self-differentiation. In a TED Talk video titled, How to Talk to the Worst Parts of Yourself, focus group researcher and empathy trainer Karen Faith describes how she came to use what she learned in her focus group work to practice pluralism with the internal parts of herself. Here she is describing how her morning parts meditation goes.
Moderating rooms of strange and difficult voices is what taught me to welcome all the strange and difficult parts of myself. No kidding. I start every morning meditation with the same thanks everyone, same opener I used as a focus group moderator. Thanks everyone for being here. Your input is valued. I'm going to hear from each of you. I'll give you all the chance to speak. Just do your best to be completely present, honest. Try to make any requests reasonable.
A little glitchy, but you get the idea. On a more serious note, she also talks about having to use what she calls unconditional welcome that she learned for her job when she had to deal with really difficult folks that she sometimes didn't even like. Eventually, she ended up having to provide that same unconditional welcome for herself when a voice inside of her, a part that was afraid and angry and hopeless and in a lot of pain, began to tell her relentlessly that she just wanted out of here. She just wanted to die. Finally, Karen Faith spoke with this part, this voice of suicidal ideation, spoke with her with unconditional welcome and said that she knew about the pain and would take care of her, but would not obey her. Now, these conversations between parts of the same person may seem strange at first. Really, though, they're just the internal thinking dialogue that all of us experience brought into explicit consciousness. Karen Faith says that that unconditional welcome comes from understanding that we have been told too often that love is hard. It's not, she says. Even with those who we may really dislike a lot, including parts of ourselves. Karen Faith says, love is what happens when we stop trying to figure out who deserves it. For one another. For ourselves. Love is what happens when we stop trying to figure out who deserves it. And that is the heart of pluralism.
Now join me in saying the words for extinguishing our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together again.
May we go out today embracing the beauty to be found in the multi-hued tapestry that is humanity and human creativity. May we welcome without condition the wholeness of our own being. May we live with the magnificent knowledge that each of us is worthy of and deserves love. May the congregation say amen,
amen,
and blessed be. Go in peace.
This is a production of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, go to our website at austinuu.org.